got a sprain or an itch. Pain that's swelling or twitch. Call up and ask me. Dr. Lasky. Call up and ask me. Dr. Lasky.
Welcome to another edition of Hey Doc. I'm Dr. Harold Lasky, medical director and physician at Southside Medical Center, right here in Jacksonville, Florida. I'm your host for the next half hour. With me today is my co-host and wife, Carmen Lasky, a certified EMT. Together, we hope that you will find the show informative, educational, as well as entertaining.
I'd like to say something about ransomware. And no, it really does not have anything to do directly with your health or the healthcare industry, unless, of course, you look indirectly at ransomware that affects hospitals and drug manufacturers. But I began thinking about ransomware again as a new story came about this week when a major meat producer who hacked a company named JBS Foods, which happened to be one of the world's largest food companies, was hacked and distribution of red meat was slowed, if not halted, to many areas, not just in the United States, but to other countries, including Australia, as the company has operations in 15 countries and has customers in about 100 countries, at least according to its website. One of these brands that is distributed by the company is Pilgrim, whose name I was at least familiar with.
The cyber attack on JBS, the world's largest meat producer, has forced a shutdown of some of the largest slaughterhouses around the world, including 9 U.S. beef plants.
The White House described the hack as ransomware, which resulted in the closure of all 9 of the company's United States beef plants. And the White House has said that the ransomware attack was likely carried out by a Russian-based criminal organization, and that it is dealing with the Russian government on the matter. But that's neither here nor there right now. The main thing is that the perpetrators of ransomware usually cost the company millions of dollars, not just in the ransom, but in the loss of business while the companies are shut down and loss of jobs for those that had no work during those periods. It also, of course, affected the people who rely on the product for their daily consumption and their daily income, such as restaurants and supermarkets.
As the name states, the perpetrators demand money or other perks before they will release the effect of whatever they did to the digital information, such as hijack the databases of these companies.
We do know that the company said that they restored operations on Wednesday and have told employees that they can return to work. That's good. What we do not know is how they managed this. Did they simply pay the ransom and this get on with the work? We all know that most experts tell those directly affected by things such as ransomware to never pay the ransom. We've seen this in famous kidnapping cases, such as the Charles Lindbergh case, where Lindbergh's son was supposedly kidnapped, held for ransom, and then killed.
But a lot of these malevolent hackers are pretty adept at what they do and seem to know just how much they can ask and still get the business to pay the ransom.
Were there meat shortages? Maybe, but probably not. Again, remember that in a ransomware attack, hackers steal the organization's data and lock its computers. Victims must pay to regain access to their network and prevent the release of sensitive information. Now, some sophisticated ransomware hackers, such as the Russian hacker group DarkSide, sell their ransomware technology and take a cut of any ransoms paid to their customers.
Just recently, there was another hack when a ransomware attack targeted Colonial Pipeline, which forced a 6-day shutdown of one of the United States' largest fuel pipelines.
That May attack resulted in gas shortages, spiking prices, and consumer panic. Now, if I remember correctly, there has been at least one hospital account that has been hacked and held for ransom. The information gleaned by those hackers can have a great deal of information on your health and your healthcare dollars. I can see where this can also affect things like the stock market and many people's savings, especially if the hackers get the secondary benefit of knowing which companies will be hacked and which ones they can buy stock in as the price of the shares plummet right after the hacking.
That is often where the indirect results can affect more and more of our population. All of this can really give you a stomachache.
Which brings us to our first real medical subject of this program, gastroenteritis. Unfortunately, sometimes it's called the stomach flu. Now, I've heard the question dozens of times. I got the flu shot last year, but I still got the stomach flu. Why should I bother getting it again this year if it doesn't work? Well, the flu shot protects against influenza, which isn't the same thing as the stomach flu or gastroenteritis.
Gastroenteritis is an infection caused by a variety of viruses, including rotaviruses and noroviruses, but not caused by influenza viruses.
Really a pretty poor choice of nicknames for this particular disease. Remember that influenza attacks your respiratory system. That's your nose, throat, and your lungs. And the signs and symptoms of influenza include cough, congestion, fever, and muscle aches.
On the other hand, gastroenteritis attacks your intestines, causing diarrhea, vomiting, fever, chills, headache, and body aches.
The only ones in common here seem to be fever and some kinds of aching. Although you can reduce your risk of influenza and gastroenteritis by washing your hands often with soap and water, as well as disinfecting contaminated and frequently touched surfaces. The annual flu vaccine is the most effective way to reduce your risk of getting influenza, and that means it could also help reduce the severity if you do get the disease.
The most common way to develop viral gastroenteritis is through contact with an infected person or by ingesting contaminated food or water. If you are otherwise healthy, you will likely recover without complications.
But for infants, older adults, and people with compromised immune systems, viral gastroenteritis can be deadly. There's no effective treatment for viral gastroenteritis, so prevention is really the key here. In addition to avoiding food and water that may be contaminated, thorough and frequent hand washings are simply your best defense. But this does not mean that we do not have a treatment for gastroenteritis, especially medications that get rid of the annoying and often dangerous symptoms.
The diarrhea can be bloody, and this usually means you'll have a different, more severe infection.
And depending on the cause, viral gastroenteritis symptoms could appear within 1 to 3 days after you're infected and can range from mild to severe. So don't just look for the culprit in the last meal that you had. And don't sit there and blame the restaurant that you ate in 6 hours ago. Symptoms usually last just a day or two, but occasionally they may persist for as long as 10 days. And remember, though there are other causes of gastrointestinal symptoms, gastroenteritis is caused by viruses, while some other causes may be related to bacteria, such as Clostridium difficile, Salmonella, and E. coli, and even parasites like Giardia.
So, if you are an adult and you are not able to keep liquids down for 24 hours, vomiting for more than 2 days, vomiting blood, you're dehydrated, or notice blood in your bowel movement, it may be time to seek your doctor's help.
And if you have a fever over 104 degrees Fahrenheit. Now, we mentioned dehydration is a sign of danger. Remember that the signs of dehydration include excessive thirst, dry mouth, deep yellow urine, or little or no urine, and severe weakness, dizziness, and lightheadedness. Now, for children and infants, it's important. You have to see the doctor right away.
If a person with the symptoms is an infant or child, then it is probably time to see the doctor if the temperature is above 102 Fahrenheit, or if the youngster is lethargic or very irritable, or the child has bloody diarrhea.
Again, dehydration is a symptom that should lead you to getting a doctor's help if the child has the symptoms mentioned. But let's get back to gastroenteritis. There are several viruses that can cause gastroenteritis.
For example, noroviruses can do it. And both children and adults are affected by noroviruses, which just happens to be the most common cause of foodborne illness worldwide.
It's especially likely to spread among people in confined spaces. And in most cases, you pick up the virus from contaminated food or water, although person-to-person transmission is also possible. Then there's the rotavirus, which worldwide is the most common cause of viral gastroenteritis in children, who are usually infected when they, well, you know, put their fingers or other objects contaminated with the virus into their mouths. Luckily, there is a vaccine against viral gastroenteritis, which appears to be effective in preventing the infection. Some shellfish, especially raw or undercooked oysters, can also make you sick. Although contaminated drinking water is a cause of viral diarrhea, in many cases the virus is passed through the fecal-oral route.
That is why you will always see a notice in restaurant restrooms telling employees that they must wash their hands before leaving the bathroom.
Although most of us get over a bout of gastroenteritis without serious complications, there are those that do suffer consequences. The main complication of viral gastroenteritis, and I can't stop but say it so many times, dehydration.
Infants, older adults, and people with suppressed immune systems may become severely dehydrated when they lose more fluids than they can replace.
We also mentioned before the vaccine against gastroenteritis. That's caused by the rotavirus, and it is available and usually given to children in the first year of life. We've all learned the best ways to wash our hands during this COVID pandemic. After all, the COVID-19 infection is due to a virus.
Remember, as a precaution, use separate personal items around your home and avoid sharing eating utensils, drinking glasses, and plates.
And don't forget to use separate towels in the bathroom. Now, if someone in your home has viral gastroenteritis, disinfect the hard surfaces, such as the counters, faucets, and the doorknobs, with a mixture of 2 cups of bleach to every 1 gallon of water. And you should also avoid undercooked meats and fish. Now, we've been concentrating on gastroenteritis, but let's divert our attention to something called traveler's diarrhea, which we'll talk about in just a few moments. After all, more and more people are traveling now that restrictions have been lifted from COVID-19 pandemic problems.
This is a great time to tell you about Southside Medical Center. Hello, I'm Dr. Harold Lasky. I have been the medical director and physician at Southside Medical Center for the past 34 years. We're located at 3604 Southside Boulevard, just 2 blocks south of the Beach Boulevard intersection between the Tulsa Welding School and the old Pottsburg Post Office.
We will treat your pains, sprains, and strains.
We are proud to welcome to Southside Medical Center Dr. Susan Pollan, MD, a board-certified pain specialist.
Our practice emphasizes chronic pain management as well as anti-aging medicine. We also have an office-based substance treatment program for those who need it. Southside Medical Center is open 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. Monday through Friday. If you would like to make an appointment or ask any questions about Southside Medical Center, please call us at 641-4411. That's 641-4411.
Southside Medical Center, where your health is our primary care. Welcome back to the Hey Doc Show.
Now let's continue on from where we left off, and that was talking about traveler's diarrhea.
Traveler's diarrhea is a type of gastroenteritis you get from ingesting contaminated food or water.
You can get traveler's diarrhea anywhere, but you're more likely to get it traveling to developing countries in Asia, the Middle East, Central America, South America, Africa, the Caribbean, and Mexico.
People get sick by eating contaminated or undercooked shellfish, meat, fish, and raw fruits and vegetables that may have been washed in contaminated water. Street food is another type of food that may make you sick. Drink bottled water and use bottled water to brush your teeth.
And don't forget that you have to be careful about beverages that you ingest. Do not drink beverages that have ice. After all, the soft drink may be disease-free, but once ice is added, well, all bets are off. The duration of stomach flu due to traveler's diarrhea depends on what kind of microorganism is causing the infection. And if the infections are not treated, there could be major problems. Bacterial diarrhea lasts usually maybe 3 to 7 days, and viral diarrhea usually lasts 2 to 3 days. Then we have protozoal diarrhea, and that lasts weeks to months.
We have talked in the past about a number of parasites that cause stomach problems worldwide. Remember that parasites are small microorganisms that rely on animals or people for their survival.
The parasitic organisms include Giardia and Cryptosporidium parvum, which are spread through contaminated water. So eating food washed with contaminated water can make you sick, just as can drinking or even swimming in water that contains parasites.
Remember that in many areas of the country, some labs will allow you to bring in your own stool samples for testing for ova and parasites. Many of the medications often used and prescribed by physicians for gastroenteritis are simply to ease the symptoms and prevent dehydration.
So even if you don't feel like eating, it's still important to take in adequate fluids, electrolytes, calories, and nutrition. You can do this by sipping fruit juice, soft drinks without caffeine, sports drinks, and electrolyte drinks. Broth works as well, too. Maybe you've heard of what's called the BRAT diet, B-R-A-T. So when you're ready for solid foods, you can stick to this diet and have bananas, rice, applesauce, and toast. You could try potatoes as well, but try to stay away from dairy, sugary foods, alcohol, and caffeine, as these could worsen your symptoms. Now, since all of you listening to this radio show have up to now lived through the pandemic, it's important to look at ourselves and our well-being, especially if we are getting back to the rigors of working, back at the office, or at least away from home.
Most of us inherently know that working long hours can impact your heart health. Now, a new report found that working over 55 hours is associated with an increased risk of death.
It's important to remember that the number of hours is not the only factor to determine if you are overworked. Now, to determine this, you need to look for signs that work is exhausting you and affecting your health.
If you are in a job that is negatively impacting your health, there are ways to improve your mental health even if you don't switch jobs.
You probably won't be surprised to learn that working too much can have negative effects on your health. But just how bad? Well, a recent report released by the World Health Organization, the WHO, and the International Labor Organization said that overwork led to 745,000 deaths from stroke and heart attack in 2016. Now, that's actually an increase of 29% since the year 2000. So protecting yourself from overwork can quite literally be a matter of life and death.
During the pandemic, going to work was made more dangerous by a lethal virus for many in-person essential workers. But even for the work from home set, this is a serious problem.
Teleworking has become the norm in many industries, often blurring the boundaries between home and work. But not only that, many businesses have also been forced to scale back or even shut down their operations to save money. And people who are still on the payroll end up working longer hours. And you may be one of these. That means the danger of being overworked are real for most, if not all of us. It's time to take a closer look at what overworking feels like. And you need to know just what you can do to protect yourself.
We already mentioned the WHO definition of overwork, that being working more than 55 hours a week.
That study found that working 55 or more hours per week is associated with an estimated 35% higher risk of a stroke and a 17% higher risk of dying from ischemic heart disease, compared to working 35 to 40 hours a week. And it's important to understand that being overworked doesn't just affect us physically. You could feel foggy-headed and have trouble solving problems. You could find yourself making careless mistakes or being short-tempered, or even having a lower tolerance for work issues.
Other physical symptoms could include feeling fatigue, experiencing headaches, feeling tense, or like you can't relax, feeling nauseous or sick to your stomach.
Sometimes it's the emotional aspect that becomes detrimental, such as increased anxiety or feeling worried all the time. There might even be a sense of dread or simply a fear of going to work.
Going back to work might set up some interpersonal relationship problems, and you may see yourself avoiding co-workers who you used to have no issues with, getting into more conflict with people at work or loved ones at home, blowing up a little things.
You might find yourself sleeping less, drinking more alcohol, or using more recreational drugs. But you do not want to quit your job. There are some things that you can do to help yourself. You could take time to eat lunch, go for a walk, or even meditate as a method to unwind. These sometimes feel like silly steps, especially for someone who has never had to practice them in the past. But these seemingly small steps will not only help you de-stress, they'll also boost your productivity in the long term, ultimately helping you to feel better.
If it is possible, look at setting boundaries at work. Be clear about how much work you can take on and say no to things when it becomes too much.
If you have control over your schedule, be strategic about adding break time between appointments or meetings, even for 5 minutes. The point isn't really just the time, but to attempt to disconnect from work, even for a little while.
And beyond the small breaks, when possible, start reading, listening to music, or doing some physical activity, pretty much anything that releases stress that would otherwise build up and harm your health.
That's your time to just disconnect and think about something else. Just take care of yourself. So it's now time for Carmen and me to end the program and just take the time to relax. Why don't you do it as well?
I'd like you, our listeners, to know that I am one of several physicians right here in the Jacksonville area that has received the certification to recommend medical marijuana to those patients with certain qualifying diagnoses. For more information, you can call our office at 641-4411. We have also set up a special website at CompassionateCareJax.com, where you can get a whole lot more information on medical marijuana.
We've come to the end of another Hey Doc show.
So, from all of us here at Southside Medical Center, have a happy and healthy weekend. Goodbye.